A lot has been happening since we last talked. If you were listening to the podcast, you know that last weekend Cody was leaving for Alabama. And I made fun of it mercilessly because I've been to Alabama. I, of course, love Lynyrd Skynyrd, Sweet Home Alabama, and Alabama Getaway. There's a lot of Alabama songs, not a lot of Alabama culture, in my opinion. I could be wrong. Then I was reminded, as Cody told me, that NASA is in Alabama, which is surprising. We like to blow things up. We're going to shoot it up to the moon. So you were in Huntsville? Is that correct? Have you figured it out? Have you figured out what to do in there?
I'm all good. I know exactly what I'm doing.
All right. Then, as the old as the old hack joke goes, tell your face, because you looked confused and nervous.
I've always been told I have a face for radio, Brian.
Yeah, well, then I should pull the blind down and not be able to see it, because it's terrifying me. So what, you were in Huntsville for a conference for your day job?
Yeah.
Some sort of big brainy, I don't know. Alabama, big brainy, do those go together? So you were down there for a conference?
I was. For a science communicator conference.
What does that mean?
Actually, science communicators.
YouTubers. People who talk about science?
Science! Yes.
Yeah, was Thomas Dolby there?
Who?
Thomas Dolby.
Mm-mm.
You blinded him with science.
Right, he was blind, so he couldn't make it.
I don't know.
I mean, he could have made it, but he...
Are you saying you discriminate against blind people? You're not going to let them into your conference, science communicator conference? Somebody's visually challenged?
He had a more difficult time making it.
I see.
And just decided it wasn't worth the whole...
All right. This joke was just supposed to be a throwaway. Now it's turned into a whole big thing about discriminating against the visually impaired. I don't care for it.
This is what we do.
Yeah. Not comfortable. All right. So you go down there to talk about science for your day job.
Yeah. Everyone there claimed that Huntsville, Alabama, has the highest rate of people with PhDs per capita in the country.
You sure it wasn't highest pH value in the water?
I think that's somewhere in Michigan.
All right.
But no, it blew me away. It's like a little bigger than Rockford. It's about 180,000. And everyone was super nice. Everyone was super smart. And apparently there's very low crime. Apparently the property... Like, it's just the values, you can just buy it.
If you don't work for NASA, what else is there to do in Huntsville?
We went to like an artist colony, which apparently is a thing, which I didn't know. It's like a artist complex, this whole mill they turned into all these art shops and studios. And we went to this big, like, lumber yard that had been turned into a series of restaurants where people have, like, wedding receptions and stuff.
Oh, really?
It's also, like, an open restaurant, and there's, like, a recording studio next door where the guy's been there for 30 years. He's recorded, like, Grammy Award-winning artists. But there was all this culture down in Huntsville, and I even talked to a Uber driver who said that he was an Auburn fan, which I thought was illegal down in that state.
Well, Auburn's in Alabama.
Yeah, but
so you can like Auburn. I think it's one of those where you're split 50-50. Either Roll Tide or you're an Auburn Tiger. I think those are your two Alabama choices.
I got the sense it wasn't the Roll Tide kind of place, but it was great. I loved Huntsville. I did not want to leave. Like, there were several people at this conference who literally were talking about, like, man, I might look at some property down here in Huntsville.
Really?
I'm calling it now. Here is my completely amateur prediction from spending 3 days there at a conference going to places most people probably don't go to most of the time. I'm saying Huntsville is going to be the next Austin, Texas.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Should we go down there and do like a morning show down there, Huntsville?
I would straight up like that.
We'd go to Huntsville? All right, let's start looking. I don't think we should be job searching while we're doing our other job. I'm just, I don't know. I can't see going to, well, you paint a beautiful picture of it. So they've got a lumberyard full of restaurants and an artist colony. Is there other cultural activity down there besides, you know, going out in the swamps and killing things?
Oh, I mean, the outdoors.
Banjo playing? What else is happening down there?
Well, it's by the mountains, right? So, like, there's outdoor stuff right by there.
There's mountains in Alabama?
Yeah, kind of by the mountains. It's just hills. You know what?
There's hills.
It's more than Illinois.
Okay.
There were three-dimensional terrain.
Well, if you go in southern Illinois, there's lots of hills.
That's true.
A whole different topography than there is up here.
That's true.
Here we just have buildings. Down there they have nature. All right, so I'll have to check it out. Would you go to there for a vacation? Long weekend? Are there plays there? Do musicians travel through there for tours?
There's a decent art scene. We actually went to their art museum on Saturday. Really great exhibits.
Really?
Some really, really cool stuff. I mean, no, like, Picasso's
other
or
than just, you know, stuffed animals that people have killed?
Taxidermy.
Taxidermy, that's the word I was looking for, yes?
Yeah, no, no, none of that that I saw. But they've got a burgeoning scene. The only major drawback is that because it's such a smaller town, flights in and out of there are a bear.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was like $400 round trip.
Are you kidding me? They got to change that.
Yeah,
it's, you got to change it up.
That's the biggest thing. So I wouldn't recommend just like a leisurely couple days there because, I mean, you could fly to L.A. or Seattle for way less.
Yeah.
But maybe if the population goes
you
up.
You could fly to New Orleans for less.
NOLA?
If you're going to, if you're going to go south.
Yeah.
You go to Dallas. Go to any of the big southern cities.
Yeah.
In Atlanta. I'm just going to name southern cities. Notice I didn't name anything in Florida. Nobody wants to go there.
I did notice that. I did. Yeah. You didn't mention Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge.
Have you been to Baton Rouge?
I have driven through Baton Rouge. It's fine. It's fine. You know, if I'm going to Louisiana, I have one spot in Louisiana.
You know. It's New Orleans.
Yeah. Thank you. In case people were wondering. But yeah. Well, good. So we're looking forward to more Huntsville in our future. We'll go down there. I'm trying. You said that's the third most populated city in Alabama. Is that correct?
Yes, as of
Huntsville,
now.
Alabama. What's the tallest building in Huntsville, Alabama? Did you?
Can't be more than 20 stories.
20 stories.
Just from eyeballing it. It's not a big city.
And did you stay at a hotel that had indoor plumbing?
Yeah.
Okay. So indoor plumbing. They had. You mentioned they have restaurants, but the restaurants were in a lumberyard. Did you have to? Did you have to forage for your own food amongst the stacks of 2x4s, or was it actually you went in, sat down, and someone else killed the food for you and brought it?
I had to split enough firewood for a small family for the winter.
Is that right?
Yeah, everyone did.
All right.
It's a community.
Well, sure. That's. Of course. Somebody moved to Huntsville, Alabama. From the 931, as a lifelong Chicagoan who moved to Huntsville, Alabama, I'd gladly give up the pathetic politics in Chicago's south side for a city with a lack of culture. Dumb statements I'm making now. I'm actually having fun. It's called joking. Relax a little bit. People get so territorial, and nobody has a sense of humor. Cody is praising it, and I am just... somebody says there's a little tension between us, so we're going to fight at the end of the show. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. No, not Huntsville, Texas. Huntsville, Alabama. Somebody said I could work at the federal prison at Huntsville, Texas.
Ooh.
No.
Do a radio show from there.
No, because then in the audience, instead of just texting horrible things, they'd actually try to shiv you. Take me out in the yard. I'm not doing that. Forget about it. No, thanks. I've known people work at a prison. It is a hard, thankless job.
You've known people that work
at... Yes. When I lived in southern Illinois, I knew people who worked at the prisons down there.
Oh.
And it is, it is rough. As you can imagine. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who thinks it's a cakewalk job.
Sure.
Oh, I'm going to take a job at the prison. It's probably going to be lovely people to talk to every day. I can't wait. I'm sure among the employees there's a lot of nice people that you could talk to. But you're not only dealing with the employees, you're dealing with the guests. Or do you like to call them inmates?
Have you
convicts
watched Orange is the New Black?
I have never watched an episode of Orange is the New Black.
You're missing out.
I know
out.
It's ladies in prison.
You're missing out.
What am I missing out on?
Amazing writing and acting. And
right.
That's it.
Amazing writing and acting? How about the story? Is the story any good?
Yeah, it's in the writing. That's encompassed. Yeah,
that's all right. That was a given.
Amazing writing, acting, streaming. Amazing streaming on Netflix. Tremendous.
I love Netflix.
Make sure you got an internet connection.
I'm all about it. Did they have that in Huntsville? Why are you making these statements about Huntsville, Alabama? You're so bigoted. Oh, man. When did we as a nation lose our sense of humor? When did that happen?
Oh, man.
I know it's not in the last 2 years. It was happening well before that. So we can't blame this on the current administration. Because the lack of a sense of humor has been pervading this society for a while. But it seems now it's amped up where you can't make a joke. Even the most obvious joke about anything, you cannot. Well, I'm not. And it's fun. Like, for this person in Huntsville who's all upset, if I was making fun of Montgomery, oh, they'd think that was hilarious. But because they live in, you're making fun of Huntsville. Or, if I make a joke, about anything. As long as you're not in that group, you'll think it's funny. But immediately when you're in that group, it's not funny. Everything else a guy says could be hilarious. One joke about something that's close to you, oh, this sucks. You're not funny. Everybody thinks you're funny.
See, that's why our show is so good. Because
it offends everybody.
Here's why our...
Why is our show so good?
This is why our team membership, our partnership that we got on this show is good.
Why is that?
Because I make myself highly unlikable so that when you make jokes about me, everyone laughs.
Yeah.
Do that on purpose. Oh. Y'all thought that I was just unlikable. No, I'm very likable. I just make myself seem incredibly unlikable.
It's a character you're playing?
So Brian's funnier. Oh, yeah, no, the character. Anything you dislike about me, anything anyone's ever heard that me say.
It's a character?
You're like, yeah, you know, Cody's kind of dumb or I don't like him. No, it's just a character.
It's not even really your name.
It's yeah.
Cody Goff, not even your name.
Mm-mm.
It's your character's name.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, if you're not finding anything funny, then there's plenty of stations on the dial. That's all. All right, let's do this, and then we'll be back with more. It's WGN. We are sad. You were in Rockford all weekend for the Thanksgiving holiday, and Rockford lost a legend last week. We had the opportunity to speak, I think it was last year, to Joe Marino. And if you are from Rockford, you know who Joe Marino is. He is Mr. 4th of July. He died on Wednesday at age of 92. This guy was an unbelievable presence in Rockford, and the 4th of July probably wouldn't be around in Rockford or celebrated as big as it is without Joe. According to the Rockford Register Star, in an article they did on him, before Joe there was no 4th of July celebration at all. It was just an ordinary day. Joe started to volunteer. He got involved, and he, for more than 50 years, he made Rockford's 4th of July one of the best celebrations anywhere. He was a force behind the 4th of July fireworks in downtown Rockford and the Festival of Lights during the Christmas holidays in Sinisippi Park? Sinisippi Park. Again, he died on Wednesday, and he was 92. You brought him to my attention, Cody, because you had always said, as you know, when we would make fun of Rockford, because we pretty much make fun of every place. That's the way it goes. You would always say, yeah, but you got to be there on the 4th of July, because 4th of July in Rockford is crazy, and the fireworks are unbelievable. So this was big, huge news in Rockford this week, right?
Yeah, there's literally a statue of him downtown. I mean, he was Mr. 4th of July. Like, he was a big deal. And I have always said that it was just, I mean, there's nowhere I've ever been where the fireworks even touched Rockford's display. And he told us on the interview, and it was actually two years ago. So it was 2016.
Okay.
But he actually told us, I mean, the finale is something like 3 full minutes of a shell going off every second and a half.
Unbelievable.
It's just you can't even wrap your head around it. So I will be talking about this in another 8 months. I'll be telling everybody to go out to Rockford
because
it's worth the trip to see the display.
Now he did it up through 1970. Then 1971, he didn't do it because I guess in 70 things did not go well and he was feeling unappreciated. He and the other people that had been working on the fireworks display. And the 1971 display was so awful that the mayor and other people got together and asked him to come back. And so he came back. And despite the fact that he said, the 1986 fireworks were going to be his last, he did not retire. He kept volunteering, even though his health was not great. And you mentioned the statue. That was in 2010. Rockford was trying to figure out how to thank him for the decades of service that he had given to the community. And so they put a statue of him and named a park after him, Joe Marino Park at the corner of East State and Water Streets. Is that, Park?
I think that's downtown.
It could be. And this is the inscription on the statue. Joe Marino, Mr. 4th of July, a lifelong Rockford resident and beloved civic leader who championed community celebrations and festivals for half a century. His leadership inspired generations of local children and adults to enthusiastically embrace their American values of love, honor, and service to their city, country, and families. So that is the inscription. Do you have a little of us with Joe?
I do.
So people can hear?
Got a quick clip of him talking about that time he put a mortgage on his house to help fund one of the displays. Let's see if this works.
Let's
see. Yeah, in 1979, I took a second mortgage out on my house because I was running short to pay for the fireworks show. But see, I'm very committed to it.
I guess.
The greatest country in the world, as far as I'm concerned. This is the country that gave my immigrant parents and millions of others an opportunity to serve for a better life, which in turn made my life better. But I'm very committed to that point. And I don't use, we don't use any tax dollars. It's all financed through local donations from business, industry, and private citizens. And that it's also televised live on one of our TV stations while it is happening.
All right. Well, that's Joe Marino. Rest in peace, Joe. Mr. 4th of July. So they've got the park and all this. Now, the Christmas celebration is coming up. He won't be part of it. What do you anticipate going forward for Rockford? Is this obviously a sad day? And now they've got to be scrambling, not only for the Christmas thing, but looking ahead to the next 4th of July. This is a guy who not single-handedly, but spearheaded the effort to put Rockford on the 4th of July map.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, there are members of his family still involved in the display. I'm sure that he's taught many people many things over the years. And I would imagine that this coming 4th of July is going to be extra special just as a tribute to him.
Mm-hmm.
The first one after him passing away. Not every fireworks celebration in Rockford or every display is done by him, as we've kind of discussed. So I saw fireworks at Stroll on State Street last night, and like that, I don't believe that was his.
There's another, that maybe the State Street, Chamber of Commerce.
So there's a variety, but so I'm not sure what to expect kind of around town, but I am definitely not going to miss 4th of July fireworks in about 8 months. Mark my words.
Your words are marked. And we'll leave you with these words from Joe Marino. And it's as true today as it was 40 years ago. Maybe we don't agree with all of what's going on in this country, but at least we have the right to disagree, and maybe that's what the 4th celebrates. And he said that on July 1st, 1975. So rest in peace, Mr. 4th of July. Rockford and the entire area is less because you are gone. All right, let's do this. Is it bad that as a grown-up I'm hoping for a snow day tomorrow? Because I'm supposed to start in second grade tomorrow. Not taking classes in second grade, but I'm supposed to take over a second grade class starting tomorrow.
I hope for a snow day every winter day of my adult life.
Yeah, there's not. So I'm kind of hoping. I don't know how it works. You know, I'll still have to get up and see. Plan on being there, but it's. I'm sure teachers are hoping for snow days as well as the kids. And you know the kids are, because this is the kind of night where you go to bed and. When, back in the day, Cody, you'd get up and you'd turn on, your mom and dad would be listening to Wally Phillips, and you'd go right to Ray Rayner on Channel 9, and Ray Rayner had all the school closings. So you had to listen. And it's not like now where you can just go online, and WGN has these closing center. If you go to WGNradio.com, that's all well and good. Takes some of that fun away. The immediacy of being able to see it on the internet, or just having to wait till they said your school, or you read it on the bottom of the crawl if you were watching TV. So, I'm always, woohoo, I'm hoping.
I can't imagine any adult who wouldn't want a snow day.
There's adults who are really professional and really like going to work.
But these days, so many people can do things remotely.
That's true.
Sure, if you work in retail, you gotta go in, but.
Right. If you work here, you gotta go in.
Sure, yeah.
You know? I'm sure the morning show's gonna be here no matter what. I'm sure Nick and Dan will be here no matter what.
We've only been affected one time. Remember, there was an overnight, and then whoever was doing mornings that morning couldn't make it. So you had been doing a show since 10 p.m.
Right.
And it's like 5 or 6 in the morning, and you're like, well, guess I'm doing the morning show
now. That was a long time ago.
That was downstairs in the old studio.
So yeah, it was in the back.
09, 2010.
Right. It might have been, I think it was Steve Cochran. It was an ice storm or something. I know I did that for, because they were like, all right, just switch seats. And I switched from one side of the studio to the other and just started. And then there was one blizzard that I couldn't make it. I missed one show it was a Sunday night. But this was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe, because I was still way out in Frankfurt. And it was bad. And I was like, there's no way I'm getting in. And they were telling you to stay off the road and all this. And I was like, forget it. It's not, I can't do it.
But for the most part, snow can't keep us off the air.
No. I was here for 2011 for the big blizzard. because I was doing sports night at the time. So they called us early that day and said, listen, can you get in here and be around and we'll get you a hotel room? This back at the station actually got us a hotel room.
What?
Not all of us together. It was one single room.
I missed the slumber party?
Yeah, Calf Audrey and I, just, you know, one bed. We were like the seven dwarves. We just were kind of stacked on top of each other. No, but they were like, can you get here? And so I got here just before the snow started falling, parked at the hotel and walked over. And then we did our show and we stayed on after. And then I was around the next morning. It was crazy.
I remember you had one of those weeks where you were on like 20 out of 24 hours somehow.
You like being on. You're just here, you know. That's the kind of day you like being here, because people are listening because we're all kind of stuck in this together. And especially that blizzard, nothing was moving the next day. It was like The Walking Dead with snow, instead of zombies, because the whole city was just quiet. And that was when we had the parking lot over at GN at the old building. Some people had left their cars there, or their cars were buried, and they were there for weeks.
I remember that.
It was ridiculous.
My senior year of college, there was a big blizzard in Des Moines, and I had a key, because I ran the radio studio at Drake.
Yeah.
I had a key to the studio in the student center, but security put out an alert. They're closing down all the buildings. I snuck into the studio, unlocked it, hid until security left, then went on the air so I could give people updates on the severe weather. Because I was like, I don't want to just be playing Top 40. We need to be, this is breaking news.
Right. You had a sense of community and a sense of responsibility even then. And how'd it go? Did security come and escort you out in handcuffs?
Frankly, I don't think anyone listened to that station at that time. But
in your mind.
I thought I was doing something good.
I'm sure you were. Got a text from the 847. I've been a teacher for 18 years. We love snow days almost more than the kids. All right. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed that my district gets a snow day tomorrow. Somehow I doubt it. You know, they'll make these kids come trudging through the foot of snow.
Well, you had a daughter recently that was in
I did
schools.
Have a daughter recently.
Yeah. Has it gotten easier or harder over the years, you think, the criteria for snow days?
They didn't have a lot of snow days back in when Molly was in high school. And even in grade school, they didn't have a lot of snow days. I don't know. I think CPS is starting to call things a little bit earlier. But, you know, they didn't call it now because nothing's happened. And I think people, because they've gotten caught once or twice where they called school and then things weren't as bad as they didn't get as bad as they were supposed to. And I think a lot of districts are starting to be a little gun shy because they went the other way where even a prediction of a blizzard, all right, we're going to call school tomorrow. But I have a feeling they'll wait, and sometime in the middle of the night or very early in the morning, they're going to decide. And so, you know, some schools are on call trees, where you'll just start getting calls from the district. You know, you can always come to WGN Radio and WGNRadio.com, and we will have the closing center rocking and rolling. So I'm sure that's still a thing, right?
The closing center?
Yeah, the closing center.
I've never heard
for
that.
Things that are closed.
Is that what we call it?
I believe that's what we call it.
I don't think I've ever heard that phrase on this station.
Well, what else would we call it?
Maybe I just filter out the names of segments.
Well, yeah, you don't really pay attention to a lot of stuff.
I just focus on the content.
Yeah, well, all right.
Like, I don't necessarily know it's the Brian Noonan Show. Well, that's the name of it. I just think of it as that hilarious thing I produce for a few hours a week.
Oh, boy.
What do you do at WGN? And there's this guy I work with.
I don't know. Guy comes on, talks, allegedly tells jokes. That's you know.
As long as they're not about me.
No, then that's always fine. Yeah, it's the closing center. I'm sure that's what it's called.
I believe you. You've been listening to WGN longer than I have.
I have. I've been listening, well, since 3 o'clock, so I know that's a thing. Yeah, it's, you know, just come here to WGN Radio. Listen, we'll help you out. Go to the website. We'll help you out. Watch it on WGN TV. They'll help you out. But it's not going to be one of those days where you're like, I don't know what's happening. No, you'll know what's happening. You'll know exactly what's happening. People will tell you. You know what, when you might not know what's happening? When you bid on an auction, for, you know, those you ever watch Storage Wars on A&E?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that show. I don't like any of the people who are on it. But I like the idea of buying storage units. Cause people just put all kinds of junk in there and they're like, oh yeah, I'll pay. And then they don't pay. And so the owners of the storage facilities then auction them off. And at least on the show, you get like 2 minutes. They open the door, you just get to look in. You don't get to walk in and rummage through stuff, but you get to kind of peek around and go, oh, all right, there's an ottoman and there's, you know, the head of a stuffed animal. I don't know what else in there. Well, imagine, if you will, paying $500 for the contents of a storage unit. And you get it home, and there you get in there, and you're looking around. Oh, there's a safe in here, an unopened safe. You think, oh, this could be great. Well, according to the guys on A&E, most of the time, safes are empty. You know, you pay to get somebody to open it, and you're like, oh, nothing's in there. Geraldo's at your house expecting some big thing. Nothing happens. Well, not so fast, my friend. Imagine opening this safe and finding not one, not two, not $3 million, but $7.5 million.
In cash? What?
Cash money. $7.5 million. Now, so the people who find this, they're obviously excited. And they tell somebody. And this woman runs into this guy, Dan Dotson, who is the auctioneer on this Storage Wars show, and tells him, oh my goodness, a friend of my husband, this happened to him. Well, now, here's the ethical question. What do you do? You've bought a storage unit. Inside that storage unit is a safe. Inside that safe, 7.5 mil cash in a bag. What do you do? I'll tell you what they decided to do and what happened. And I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. Let me know. It's WGN. Imagine finding $7.5 million in cash in a bag in a safe that you bought at an auction site. So this person bought the storage unit at auction, paid somebody to open the safe. Boom. $7.5 million. The first person they called to open the safe couldn't do it, so they called a second one, and when that person opened the safe, boom. $7.5 million cash. Now, I initially, when I heard this story, I went, why would you tell anybody? Why don't you just shut your mouth, take your $7.5 million, and go on about your merry way? But then I started thinking, what kind of people keep $7.5 million in cash in a safe? And my first thought was unsavory. You don't know where this money came from. You don't know who had that storage unit. Well, and that's the case. So the people who owned this storage unit and let it go to the point where it got auctioned off, were very upset, and they immediately called a lawyer. And they wanted this lawyer to start negotiating a deal to get their money back. So they make an offer. The attorney offers $600K. And the people say, nah, I don't think so. Now, see, this is what's scary, because if the people who owned the storage unit first, who let it go and who owned the safe before you bought it, are able to find you because it's a matter of record, you don't want to leave people like that coming for you. So you work out a deal. Well, they did. They set a deal, and they returned the money for a $1.2 million reward. So that's still a $1.5 million profit, which is not a bad day's work. When you see some of those times on when they buy these storage units on Storage Wars, they make like $30, a couple $100. So, you know, a $1.5 million profit, take it, move on. But there's other people who are saying, oh, I would have kept that money. No, not a chance. Because it had to be from some nefarious thing. Right? A drug dealer, some criminal, somebody who doesn't want their money in a bank. Because who keeps that kind of cash around? Terrorists? Right?
People who are, you know, Bitcoiners.
People who are what?
Bitcoiners.
Bitcoiners keep their money in a safe, their cash money in a safe. This is not virtual money. This was actual money.
Bitcoiners that don't know how to use Bitcoin. People that don't trust banks or the government to know where their money is.
If you don't trust banks and the government, you're probably not making that kind of money.
Probably not. There's people out there, man.
Yeah, but those people who are making that kind of money and aren't trusting the bank or government are criminals.
Not necessarily. Look, they're probably very, very few and far between, but There's a lot of people out there with pretty extreme views.
Well, that's fine. Then wouldn't those same rich people pay their bill for rental on their storage unit?
They're not always smart in every way.
Well, how...
what you're saying is likely. Look, I still can't... Look, the nefarious deed already happened. The money already ended up in the place. You know?
Yeah.
So just, you know, keep it. I'd keep it. I wouldn't tell anybody about it.
I'd be happy with the 1.2 as a reward, because then those people are off your back. You know? Maybe. Maybe not, though. Maybe they say, yeah, we'll make the deal. Give them the 1.2, and then some, they're coming back for that money. But it's a finder's fee. You got to pay a finder's fee. You know, 20% finder's fee.
20% finder's fee is fine.
Yeah, that's what they got for finding the money. I don't know. It seemed strange. But yeah, so they, here's what the owner of Dan Dotson said, the guy who was on Storage Wars. He wouldn't ask a darn thing. $7.5 million is a lot of money, but that's a lot of running too. So he figured he was going to have to be on the run for the rest of his life if it was him.
Well, he wouldn't tell people. It's not like the lottery. You don't have to announce it.
Yeah, but see, I guess there must be a way for the person who had it to find out who bought it. Which
yeah.
doesn't seem right. If you auction it off, because if I own something and I don't pay for it, and they auction it off, I shouldn't have the right then to go and try to get it because I didn't pay. And I'm sure that these rental places send notices, just like if you're behind on your electric bill or your, you know, any of that. So you have notice if you choose not to pay, but maybe people move and they forget. That's one of the things I've heard. Well, you know, sometimes people move and they forget they have stuff in storage. Who forgets they have $7.5 million in a safe in a storage closet? Nobody.
Maybe they died.
Could be they died.
Then you got nobody on your back.
Huh? All right. Well, hang on. So they die, but then if they're dead, who's coming to look for it?
Nobody.
Somebody. Well, these people couldn't have been dead because somebody was coming looking for it.
Well, that's fair.
The original owner, The owner wanted it, so somebody is there. Somebody knows. And it's scary that if you buy something, then your name becomes part of the public record. Where you go, oh yeah, we bought something.
Yeah, I don't like having my transaction history, even with like Amazon and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Amazon knows everything I've bought online for like 11 years.
Sure, and most of it's creepy.
Way creepy.
Way creepy, and then game related.
Super game related.
Two purchases that are game related, three that are super creepy.
But hey, it's because I had a gift card.
That's
it. What was I supposed to do?
You got to buy super creepy stuff with a gift card. You're not going to use that with your own money.
Right. Socks, video games, creepy stuff. I'll go with the creepy stuff.
All right.
What is creepy stuff?
I'm not going to enumerate all the creepy stuff you could buy on Amazon. We're getting some weather reports about 2 inches outside, out by Sterling, with a picture. Dog out in the snow. There's a lot of snow out there coming down hard, and some thunder. That from the 563. And weather report from the southeast corner of Cook County, 39 degrees, very windy. No precipitation yet. That's from Peter in Sauk Village. So people keeping an eye out. So we have to keep an eye out for each other. That's how it goes. All right. Man, oh, man, I'd never get that lucky to find something like that. If I bought a storage unit at auction, it'd have nothing in it that was good. It'd have plastic, you know, Rubbermaid tubs filled with, you know, cassette tapes. Old underwear, nothing good.
Did you ever play Powerball, Mega Millions, any of that stuff?
When the huge jackpots are coming.
When the huge ones come.
I got, I think I won $4. Was it last month when it was the big crazy numbers?
Yeah, I forgot to get a ticket.
How do you forget?
Everyone told me, before you go on your honeymoon, buy a ticket. Then don't check it, then check it when you get back. I didn't do it.
You didn't buy the ticket or you didn't check it?
Didn't buy the ticket.
You gotta buy.
I keep forgetting.
You can't win if you don't have a ticket.
Here's the problem: is you gotta pay in cash to get these tickets.
Yeah, this is an issue with you lately.
I never carry cash.
You never carry cash.
I still owe you cash.
You owe me cash money.
I owe you a bunch of cash money.
Yeah, a bunch of cash money.
$7.2 million.
Well, you show up at places. How do you leave the house with? I yell at Molly about this all the time. I know you're not the only person, so I'm not singling you out, but I'm singling you out. How do you leave the house with absolutely zero cash? I've done it once or twice, and it makes me completely nuts to not have, you know, even a $5 in my pocket. I gotta have some cash. There's always gonna be a need for cash.
I've got a 10 on me.
Well, that's cash. Then you're okay.
That's it. $5, $10. Cause then if you get, you know, if you get I don't know, robbed or mugged or something.
Yeah, if you get jacked, but, you know, I'm not saying you carry a wad. I'm not saying you carry your, you know, 1.2 mil around.
Hedging my bets.
But I always, you got to have cash.
Well,
You've learned that the hard way.
But if I had a bunch of cash, then I would buy more lottery tickets. And as we know, statistically, that's really a bad idea.
I don't think you're gonna just, if you have 20 bucks in your pocket, you're not gonna.
I'm not gonna drop the whole 20, but like, I mean.
Seriously, you're that much of a degenerate that you would have any amount of money in your pocket would make you go crazy?
One or two times I've dropped like $5 on lottery tickets. And like, let's face it, no one wins the lottery. Like, it's basically impossible.
Told you I won $4.
Yeah, okay. Well, I dropped
30 yesterday and I was so mad that I won nothing.
$30? See?
Get Pam.
But not, you know why, though? Because I won 30 the previous time, so I was just kind of like even money cashing it back in, just letting it roll over.
All right. Well, that's taking your winnings and rolling them back in. That's all right.
What I used to do is every time I crossed the state line, going to and from Iowa for college, as soon as I crossed the state line at that world's largest truck stop,
grab
myself a scratch-off. And I broke even over probably about 4 years.
Did you really?
I won $20 one time off a dollar, but usually lost, and yeah, it all evened out.
Well, that's good.
Pro tip. Those machines where you feed in a few bucks and you can press whatever button, a vending machine, yeah, they don't give change.
No.
I stopped at a truck stop and dropped in a 20. That's where I actually won the $20 back.
You gotta have exact money.
I hit the $5 ticket. Cool, I got a $5 ticket. Where's my change? Oh, right.
I feel like you do about those machines, though. Like, I buy them at truck stops, like in small towns and stuff like that, because I feel like the lottery knows exactly where they put those winning tickets. Well, the serial numbers, and you can scan them.
And the winners always seem to come from smaller towns.
I know, right? I mean, if it were truly, truly random, I don't know. It just seems like more people would win where people play more in higher populated areas, but that's not the way it happens.
No.
It's interesting.
Just going back to our money in the safe. Somebody, wait a minute, they had $7.5 million in a locker, but they couldn't afford or forgot to pay for the locker that got auctioned off. If they got a notice that it was auctioned off, they were getting notices that they were. I know, I said the same thing, though. I said the same thing. I didn't understand it. Somebody from the 773, so many small restaurants are cash only. Yeah, you gotta have cash. How do you leave the house without cash? Always have at least 10 or 20 on me. I agree. And another weather report, delivering food in Winnetka. No snow showers yet. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Then it's news time, and then we will be joined in studio music by the Mudflaps. All that coming up, WGN. Now, you hear that music in the background. That's our in-studio guest tuning up. That is the Mudflaps. They are in with us. This is our first time using the big performance space at WGN. Can you hear me, Mudflaps?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Good. Mudflaps are here. They have a new record out. It's called How Young We Were. It's on their website, themudflaps.com.
Two P's.
That's what I was going to say. Because that's, if you just Google Mudflaps, all of a sudden I'm like, this band doesn't, they look like black plastic on the back of a tire. They don't look very good at all. So Barbara Hale is I went in and I said to the band, I said, all right, do you have a spokesman? And everybody looked at Barb and said, Barbara Hale is our spokesperson. So welcome, Barbara Hale, and the rest of the Mudflaps.
Thank you. It's so nice to be
here. Thank you.
It's very exciting. I've been trying to get you guys on, thanks to your lovely bass player Fran, for
he is lovely,
a
isn't
long
he?
Time. He's a lovely man. We worked in Tony and Tina's wedding together, and he told me he had a band, and then I would say, oh, why don't you get the band on? And you never came. So I doubted for a while that he actually was in a band, because quite frankly, it's one of those things like, I have a girlfriend. She's in Canada.
Why?
Fred's girlfriend in Canada. So, Barb, tell me a little bit about the band. First, introduce everybody who's in there with you.
So we've got Robert Kuda on the banjo. We've got Fran Condorf on the bass.
Nice.
Hello.
We've got Randy Molnar on the fiddle and also the mandolin.
Yes, but I'm
not. He's not going to play it. Not going to do the quick switch.
Wow, that's all right.
He'll play it later.
Yeah. And how did...
And Justin Gillum. Justin Gillum on the other guitar. Justin and I started this band many years ago.
In the 70s.
Wow. You guys have been playing a long time. You don't look a day over 42. So I don't know how you've been playing since the 70s, but congratulations. It's that good living when you're a musician playing in bars, because you are in fact a drinking band with a music problem. That's the Mud Flaps.
That is true.
So how did you guys all get together? You and Justin started out, Barb, and then how did the rest of this ragtag group come together?
Ragtag.
Well, let's see. Ragtagly. Fran has been in the band twice now.
Yep. Like a bad smell, they can't get rid of me.
I was going to say, why'd you fire him the first time?
Artistic differences? No. He had a
nervous exhaustion.
Okay.
And we found Robert on Craigslist.
We're all right? Musical dreams go to die.
Really? So I can get a sofa and a banjo player on Craigslist?
Yeah, yes. Both is better.
And both will have bed bugs.
And I think we got Randy through Robert.
This is true.
I like that you aren't really sure how you guys became a band. That's my favorite kind of... Well, there were like six of us hanging around, and there were five of us, and we just, played, and then we were a band.
I mean, kind of. It feels that way.
That's not... And I hate... This is a question I hate to ask, but I always do, because the first question when you say to somebody, oh, we're having a band on, or I know somebody in a band, what kind of music do you play? And that's hard for a lot of bands because you do a lot of different things. But for the uninitiated, for Mud Flaps newbies, how would you describe what you guys do?
Well, we have.
First of all, you don't know who's in the band.
String band.
We
Americana.
We have bluegrass instruments,
okay,
for the most part. We play original music. We like. Let's see.
John,
we like John Prine.
Okay.
I like Loretta Lynn. You can say Gillian Welsh. Huge Gillian Welsh fan. Justin is a big Towns Van Zant.
Pin it to him.
So you have a lot of influences that people would know those artists. And go, oh,
maybe
okay.
They might know
them. If they listen to any kind of music, that one of those names that you've said has to resonate with somebody. So that's that works out nice. Now you can see the Mud Flaps every Monday night. They're at the Celtic Knot in Evanston, and on Tuesday nights they are always at the Glenwood on North Glenwood Avenue in Chicago. And it says there on Tuesdays you start at 9 and you play till you're done drinking. Is that correct?
That sounds right. About midnight or so.
We keep playing after we're done drinking.
That's always best. Well, listen, we'll talk more, of course, and we'll talk to some of the other people in the band, but it's always best to let your music do the talking. So what are we going to hear first from the Mud Flaps? Now, it's again with two P's if you're going on the internet, themudflaps.com. What are we going to hear?
We're going to hear a song called Across the Great Divide.
Very nice.
Which is on the CD.
Which is called How Young We Were.
1, 2, 3.
nice. It is the Mud Flaps on 720 WGN. More with the band, more music. It's all coming up after this. WGN. In the studio, as we, this is our first time using the big WGN Performance Studio. The Mud Flaps are in the studio. Woo-hoo! We had the song. Yeah, very excited to have the Mud Flaps in here.
Do it again.
This is very exciting. Yes. And this is the strangest part of this is I can see them on cameras, but I've never done an interview where I'm not actually sitting across from someone. So I see the band. I see them all in there flipping me off and all of this, but I can't really see them in person. But you guys sounded fantastic. I will say, though, if you're flipping people off, they can't see you on the stream, on the website. So don't flip people off on the website.
It was your suggestion, just to be fair.
I know. It's my, listen,
wait,
I'm not blaming anybody.
I thought this was radio.
It is radio. Listen, we're multi-platform, Barbara. That voice you hear is Barbara Hale. She is the lead vocalist, along with Justin Gillum. Frank Hondorf is on the bass. Robert Kuda is on the banjo. Randy Molnar is playing fiddle, mandolin, and also doing vocals. I'll tell you what. I got to tell you, Robert, for being a Craigslist banjo player, pretty top-notch in there. Man.
Good, thank you, Brian.
Good for you. That's it's exciting to find, because I would have thought, well, you know, you go on Craigslist, you're gonna find somebody who's seen a banjo, maybe. But maybe they couldn't really play the banjo, but you actually know how to play that thing.
Yes, he does.
Banjo is one of the most difficult instruments to learn, right? That's what I've heard, anyway, from banjo players.
I'm not maybe I was born to play it, because it didn't seem that hard to me. I don't know.
How long have you been playing banjo?
Maybe 12 years, 13
really?
Years.
Fair enough. Was there an inspiration? Did you see Steve Martin early on? Or
no,
who?
It was growing up watching WGN TV and things like Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres.
Really?
And yeah, and Earl Scruggs playing the Beverly Hillbilly theme.
Very nice. Now, the music you guys do, it's kind of Americana, a lot of different influences. Is this the type of music, and anybody can jump in and answer this, is this the type of music you grew up listening to, or is this something an interest that you acquired over years of studying music and playing instruments, or how did you guys come to decide that this was your forte? Now I've stumped the band.
I think, like, by definition, it's the kind of music that everyone, you know, wishes they grew up listening to.
Oh, very nice. Wow,
Americana,
very nice,
right?
Randy. Yeah. It's America, so it's Americana. And Fran, I love a good stand-up bass. When did stand-up bass become your thing? Because you don't see that very often. You see, you know, people go, oh, I saw a rockabilly band, and there was a guy playing stand-up bass. But now you're in here, and you wheeled the thing in, and it sounds great.
Oh, thanks, right? Yeah, actually, I played electric bass for about 20, 25 years before I got a hold of one of these things, and I lucked into it. A friend of mine who was a sort of an antique, you know, sort of quasi-dealer, she ran across this particular instrument at an auction.
Okay.
And I was gifted and blessed with to become the owner of a 1941 K. Meyer. Built right here in Chicago.
Very nice. Is it a hard transition from electric bass to stand-up bass?
It was for me. yeah. It honestly took a good 2 years before I could pull any kind of a sound out of it, to be honest. So it was a lot of work, but now we do at least 100 dates a year, and I don't play much electric at all anymore. And this is, as they say, the real bass. So
yeah, it is. Very nice. Well, if you want to see the Mud Flaps, every Monday night they're at the Celtic Knot, 626 Church Street in Evanston. You can also see that they start at 8 o'clock. And on Tuesday nights, they are at the Glenwood, 6962 North Glenwood Avenue in Chicago, from 9 until, they say, they're done drinking. You can get all the information, as well as streaming their new album, How Young We Were. That is all at mudflaps.com. Two P's in mudflaps. Themudflaps.com with two P's. They're going back in the studio in January. Everybody was surprised, because Barb knew. This is breaking news, breaking Mudflaps news on WGN. They're going back in the studio in January. We'll gauge the excitement from the gentleman in the band after this. But we've got time for one more song before the news. What do you guys want to play for us?
Title track?
Yeah, we're going to play the title track of the album.
Sounds good.
How Young
We Were. So, here we go. 2, 3, 4. When
the days get dark and the nights won't end, and your poison body needs its poisonous friend. The walls are shaken, the past forsaken, how young we were back then.
Very nice. The Mudflaps, How Young We Were Back Then. How Young We Were is the name of the new album. If you want to hear all the cuts, you can go to themudflaps.com. That's with two P's. You guys can stick around through the news. Hear another, play another song?
Yes.
And when I say we can play another song, that means you'll play it, and I will just sit here and listen adoringly. The Mudflaps again are Barbara Hale on lead vocals and strummy guitar, Justin Gillum on lead vocals and lead guitar, Frank Condorf on bass and vocals, Robert Kuda on banjo and vocals, and Randy Molnar on fiddle, mandolin, and vocals. They're making you do a lot of work, Randy. You got multiple instruments. That seems. I hope you're getting a little extra cut when it comes to paycheck time. All right, we're going to take a quick break for the news, and then we will have more of the Mudflaps. After 6 o'clock, it is another fascinating edition of At the Breweries. I think Jesse and John are bringing another guest tonight, so we're going to have lots of fun, and it's all happening right here on 720 WGN, where it is now 5:30. I mean, this is, Pam, mark your calendar, because this may never happen again. I'm actually coming to you a few seconds early, but now I'll waste time talking about how I'm coming to you a few seconds early, and then just come to you right on time. 5:30 on 720 WGN with the news. Here's Pam Jones. So, while you are sitting at home tonight, staying warm and wondering how much snow you are going to get, you can listen to some wonderful music. In the studio with me are the Mudflaps. Two P's on the Mudflaps. TheMudflaps.com is the website where you can go and get all the information. You can also see them every Monday night at the Celtic Knot in Evanston, and every Tuesday night at the Glenwood on Glenwood Avenue in Chicago. Barb, now you mentioned before that you're going back in the studio. How did that go over with the boys? Because they didn't seem to know anything about this.
Well, you know, every so often we have a band meeting, and we talk about things, and then we don't talk about them again for a little while, and then I remind them, hey, remember we said we were going to do this? We should do this.
And then they all show up?
And then...
Hopefully?
Yeah. Yeah, usually they do.
All right.
Well, somewhat.
Yeah, I was going to say,
in four years, that's
happened once. That's as long as I've been in this game.
You know something was moving because all of a sudden Randy needed to talk. He felt this was what he needed to weigh in on. He had been waiting. It was like, no, I'm calling BS on the meetings. This is not how things operate. Let's hear another song. What do you guys got for us?
We're going to play a love song.
Ooh.
Barb wrote this for our friend Tom and Mary's wedding. This was one of the... We made a CD for their wedding, and this was one of the songs on that CD.
Very nice.
Baby, be my ride. rocking chair. Done a lot of living, but I feel like I've been given a new start. Got brand new feelings tugging on the strings. This old
Flaps on 720 WGN. How does it work for writing songs? Are one or two members of the band responsible? Is it a collaborative thing? Does somebody bring in a melody or somebody bring in some lyrics and then you guys workshop it? How does this work in the Mudflaps?
Whew, in the Mudflaps, it is solo effort. Justin, see, part of what happens in this band is Justin writes some songs that are maybe a little down, maybe a little, you know, a little
melancholy,
a little dark.
Maybe Justin has a lot of worries, the weight of the world on his shoulders.
You know,
I got to play music with these fools.
Oh, the harmony! This is going to become a behind the music, all of a sudden. So Justin writes heavier. Would you say darker, Justin? Darker songs.
Yes.
All right.
To me, they're uplifting, yeah. But these people, they find it perhaps darker, yes.
All right, so you write those, and then who's the antidote to that?
Barb.
Barb is the antidote.
It's the sweet and sour. That
the one you hear
tasty.
Laughing the entire show.
Yeah, that's Barb does seem very happy. I don't want to say she seems happier than the rest of the folks in the Mudflaps, but she seems happier than most of the rest of the folks in the Mudflaps.
She's happier than most of the rest of the folks in the city.
So you Justin and Barb, you do most of the songwriting for the group? Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Okay. Because all of a sudden, Randy, Fran, and Robert are just like, yeah, we'll sit down and let these two handle this. Let them fight it out between. And do you guys, do you vote on the songs that you're doing? How does it, is it a democracy or is it a two-person dictatorship?
It's more of like who can think of anything at the moment.
I think it should be made clear that this band is an entirely public band, at least in the time I've been playing with these guys.
What, that anybody could just walk up and be part of it?
So basically, the only times we're ever together is like at taverns playing music. So any decisions are made
there.
From the stage.
Okay.
In front of people.
The alcohol is typically
with whiskey involved, usually.
There's whiskey. So.
I was going to say, it's kind of like our show meetings. We just do them on the air. We figure, you know, we're here. We might as well get things settled.
That's now, about right.
I mean, Randy, when you joined the band, did you get a rehearsal or did you just show up?
I just showed up. Yeah. This really happened.
Robert just showed up and started playing.
Justin
with us.
Said to me, I think it was maybe in the first 20 minutes we were playing together, "Waltz in C, you kick it off, man. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Well, that's,
that really happened.
In one way, it's a testament to his confidence in your musicianship. On the other hand, you can just
We had just met 20 minutes
ago. Yeah, I was going to say, these guys really don't care one way or another. It's like, well, we'll get through it one way. So when people come out to either the Celtic Knot or the Glenwood, obviously they're going to see a loose show. They're going to see five people having a good time up there. Is it all your original stuff? Do you mix in some covers here and there? Because you're there for, you know, a good portion of the night.
Yeah, Monday nights we play 3 one-hour sets. So in order to, you know, to pad that out, I guess, you know, we probably, I don't know, what would you say we do? Maybe 60-40, something along
those lines? Yeah, we do covers. We do a few John Prine, Gillian Welsh.
Some old standards.
Yep.
You know, we throw in a Rocky Top every once in a while, you know.
There you go.
Never.
Oh.
It's happened 1.5 times.
I like that the band doesn't even know what they play. We've never played that. We play it every week. No, we've never played that song before. I don't even know how it would go. Waltz and C,
welcome,
hit it. You kick
labs.
It off. So I'm getting from this. Now, you know, I'll talk to other bands, and you can tell there's a lot of politics and stuff going on. It seems like this is the most apolitical band as far as interpersonal relationships that I've run across. You guys just kind of seem like you show up, you know what you're doing, and you do it, you have fun, and then you go home.
That's about
right.
Yeah.
That's
why it's lasted for 14 years.
And is that? Do you think that's... It's obviously the personalities of the members in the band, but do you think it also goes to the kind of music you guys are playing that's a little more, you know, intricate to play, but a laid-back kind of vibe?
I do. And I also think it's... I also think it's because we all really love music.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's more about the music than about the people. I mean, I don't want to, you know...
Well, I know for sure Fran has an ego. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but listen, Fran, that's a good thing. It's the good kind of ego.
Thank you, Brian.
That's why we need the trailer behind the van when we go on the
exactly. Road. I don't know if you shared your rider with the rest of the band, Fran, but holy cow, it took Cody 2 reams of paper to print it out for us, just so we could scratch everything out and go, just bring your bass in, be quiet and play.
And he still hasn't given me a green M&M.
He got 2 cases of green M&Ms.
Wait a second. You're holding out.
Talk to your man. I don't handle the riders. Everybody else was nice and easy. Yeah, we'll come in. If you have a mic, that'll work. That was how I liked it. You know, Fred, oh, man, there's a lot of stuff going on. All right, so the new record, How Young We Were, is available for people to stream at themudflaps.com. That's 2 P's on the Mudflaps. Do not forget. That is integral to you getting to the right site. So go to themudflaps.com. Also, head up to the Celtic Knot on Monday night to see them starting at 8 o'clock at 626 Church Street in Evanston. And on Tuesday night, the Glenwood, 6962 North Glenwood Avenue. That's in Chicago. They start at 9, and they're done when they stop drinking.
No cover charge.
No, at either place?
No cover charge anytime.
No cover. The Mud Flaps are worth 3 times what you're going to pay for them. They're worth a whole lot more than that. All right, I got to ask, before we hear the last song, a drinking band with a music problem, that is a great great moniker for a band. Does anybody want to take responsibility for that and explain not only how it came to be, but what exactly, how much you live up to that?
Justin,
was that your creation?
It was not. It was actually a fan. Or somebody that was subjected to our music came up with that. And as far as living up to it, I can give you the 100% thumbs up.
Very nice. And when you go back in the studio, do you already have material ready? Or when you go into the studio to start a new album, is it Justin and Barb, you bring stuff in that the rest of the guys haven't heard before and you just go from there? Or what's the process when you're recording new music?
It goes both ways. Like a couple of the songs on the newest album that you have there, nobody in the band had heard until we played them. And then this one, we're going to have some writing to do before we go in. So
I have a couple of songs that are almost done, so a deadline is good.
Almost done?
You know, close.
And again, when the rest of the band just heard that you're going back in the studio, this is very, the pressure is on, Mudflaps, to, you know. Now, will you tell them with a week ahead of time, Barb, when you're actually recording, or will you call them that morning and say, hey, fellas, guess what? We're in the studio in 27 minutes. Yeah. Get your stuff. Head over.
Now, I have to tell Justin at least three times in the month beforehand, and then we'll try to work it out. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck. All right. We got time for one more song from the Mudflaps. What are we going to hear?
Should we do a drinking song?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's do Trusty.
All right.
I have to say hello and I love you to my son Nathan and my husband Barrett. Sorry.
Hi, Nathan and Barrett.
And I'm not sorry. Love you guys.
Don't be sorry. That's fine.
Ready?
School tomorrow, Nathan.
Uh-huh. One, two, three.
Justin Gillum, Fran Condor, Robert Kuda, and Randy Molnar. They are the Mudflaps. You can see them every Monday night at the Celtic Knot in Evanston and every Tuesday night at the Glenwood on Glenwood Avenue in Chicago. No cover charge either place. Their new record is streaming on their website, How Young We Were. Go to themudflaps.com. That's two P's in Mudflaps. You guys were great. Thank you so much. And I actually got a text in here. I've been a fan before Barb was married and had a baby. They are great. That's from Kathy. So a lot of favorable comments coming in on the text line. So congratulations. Good luck in the studio.
Thanks, Ryan.
And good luck communicating as a band. It sounds like that's a little bit of an issue, but we'll work on that in the new year. It was great to have you guys. We will talk to you again soon. Those are the Mudflaps, themudflaps.com. All right, let's do this, and then we're back. We'll talk a little bit about the weather, figure out what's going on with schools, all of that and more on the other side. It's WGN. All right, the Mudflaps, they were a lot of fun. Again, you can check them out on their website, themudflaps.com. That's two P's. Two P's. Oh, somebody's at the Glenwood now, which is where they have their Tuesday residencies. They are listening to the Mudflaps, and they love them. So you can go see the Mudflaps on Tuesday night at the Glenwood, 6962 North Glenwood Avenue in Chicago, or Monday nights at the Celtic Knot in Evanston. So that was a lot of fun. All right, Roger, I see you bouncing in your chair. Let's do a I know technically you don't start for another 4 minutes, but I also know that you're a guy who loves to work. You're mm-hmm. not afraid to jump on early.
No,
you're not going to build a station for 3 extra minutes.
Well,
I know this is, well, I think you should. I think you should bill them for 6.
Well, I'm going for whatever.
Bill them for whatever you bill them for. That's your business. But I know this is probably going to be the top story, but I just want to hit on this again because everybody's paying attention to the weather, and we were joking about it earlier about snow days, and it turns out if you are a student or teacher or employee of Chicago Public Schools, you are definitely not having a snow day.
Correct.
The mayor came out and had a press conference. Everybody else is there. So is there anything else we need to know about that other than the kids have to go to school?
No, the kids will go to school. We're going to have a few comments from Janice Jackson, the head of the Chicago Public Schools, coming up in the news in just a couple of minutes. We're still in the immediate Chicago area. We still have rain. That will change soon. The snow ban, the beginning of the snow ban, actually runs from Zion, Illinois, all the way down to Quincy, so going south west, and that's the dividing line right now between rain and the mixture of rain and snow and the actual snowfall, and it goes quite a ways back. So we're going to be in this through the overnight, as it's being predicted, as Tom Skilling told us during your program just an hour or so ago. We're going to be in this for the duration of the overnight. We will do everything we can to keep you updated on everything that we get from the outside sources throughout the overnight. So I hope everyone stays with us.
Yes, they will, because we have another fascinating edition of At the Breweries next, and Roger will stay on top of the news and weather. So everything you need to know is right here, and it'll all happen in just a couple of minutes on WGN.
Welcome to another edition of At the Breweries.
Give me a keg of beer.
Pull up a bar stool and get ready to join the keg-versation.
A shark on whiskey is mighty risky. A shark on beer is a beer engineer.
Your one-stop shop for brews in the news is on tap.
Beer, more beer, and more beer.
Here's At the Breweries with Brian Noonan.
Yes. At the Breweries. Very exciting. Now we are back on WGN, away from the last time. Last time the boys were here, we were on the podcast. And remember, any Sunday that we are not here live, we have a brand new podcast that comes out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I welcome back into the studio our two original friends, John Carruthers from Revolution Brewing and Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island Brewing. And you guys brought a friend today.
We did, pal.
Who hey, guys.
Our old friend.
Your old friend, John Scholl. And, John, give people a little of your background.
Well, I've been hanging out with John and Jesse for quite a while.
We won't hold that against you.
Yeah. we wrote a cookbook together. And the great thing about writing a cookbook and doing a lot of beer and food events is it led us all into beer. So I work in beer as well, which isn't at a brewery necessarily. It's at a company called Cicerone Certification Program.
Yeah, explain it, because I know these guys have talked about Cicerone before, and you see that sometimes when you're in a pub, oh, these guys are Cicerone certified. What does that mean? Do I get a vest, a medal? What happens?
Well, you get a patch and a nice little pin. It's actually 4 degrees of knowledge needed to pass the exams, varying from basic knowledge that everybody who works in the beer industry, what they should know, all the way up to what we call Master Cicerone, which is similar to like a Master Sommelier. There's very few in the world, and they know their beer inside and out.
Wow. Is there anybody in town? Where can we find some Master Cicerones here?
Yeah, we have probably about four Master Cicerones who live in Chicago. I'm fortunate to work with two of them, so right across the door from mine at my office is a Master Cicerone, so it can be fun at times and intimidating at others.
There's only 18 in the world, correct?
Yeah, only 18.
Really? Mm-hmm. Now, you guys have to have some level of this, correct, or no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have the certified. It's level 2. There's what, John? 2,000 something worldwide?
So, certified Cicerone, which Carruthers and I are at, there's around 3,500. And Jesse, you have a certification as well?
The one, yeah.
Yeah, and that's certified beer server, and there's about 100,000 individuals who hold that title.
So, Jesse's like associate's degree.
Yeah, kind of. He has his high school
GED
diploma, but he's going for the next one.
Wow. Yeah, we're all just here because we love patches.
That's it. Well, who doesn't love a nice patch? Right? Iron on, so on. Yeah. See, I'm old enough to remember when we would actually, you know, put those on our pants. You know, you'd go to somewhere and you'd buy them and you'd sew them all over your jeans. I'm old, Jesse. Jesse looking at me like, are you that old? Yeah. Not Woodstock old, but, you know, close enough. All right, this is an exciting time of year because all the breweries, or all the breweries worth their salt, are bringing out barrel-aged selections. Revolution has them. Goose Island, of course, has them. A couple weeks ago, there was a giant festival, the Festival of Wood and Barrel-Aged Beers over at the UIC Forum. I ran into Jesse there. I was looking for you, John. I did not see you. But Fobab was in town. It's gotten to the point, it's a little crazy.
It's huge.
There were like 200 breweries at Fobab. And it seems everybody is trying to do this. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Goose is the original, right? Goose started this barrel-aged process.
Yeah, in 1992, Greg Hall started with Bourbon County Stout. Mm-hmm. And so it's neat to see that something that started relatively short time ago have its own festival with three sessions.
Yeah,
know?
It was crazy. It's not just beer. There were ciders and all sorts of things, and it wasn't just barrel-aged. Maybe you can explain the difference. Some were just wood-adjacent, for lack of a better term. They were kind of near wood or in wood, but they weren't actually in barrels.
Yeah, all the beers that were represented had touched wood.
So like lumber dipped?
Yeah, somebody just over at Lee Lumber taking a 2x4. Here you go.
Is that what you guys do? Oh, yikes. Boom. Got him. Wow. Got him.
Ouch. There's a lot of shade being thrown tonight. This is going to be a tense at the breweries.
John brings it out. John Scholl brings that out in us.
Yeah,
is it because you're trying to get that Cicerone? You've got to show your knowledge. You guys throw it down.
They're better trash talkers than I am, but I'm getting to their level.
Yes.
The section on throwing shade is brutal.
This is very tough. All right, so what's a mistake that some of the... And you don't have to name them. I know you guys are pretty good about not calling people out. Which I respect, because it is the more that I'm exposed to the brewery community, it is a tight community, and some people, they try hard and sometimes they just fall short. What's the biggest mistake you found in trying all these different barrel aged or wood touched beers or ales or whatever? The biggest mistake that these guys make?
I think what I've seen a lot of is the base beers that go into wood. So when you're talking about bourbon barrel-aged beers, like Imperial Stouts, they'll put in a really good stout and, you know, just add it to this barrel and, you know, let the process kind of take over. Where we at Goose Island, the base beer that goes in there is specifically designed so you're getting the flavor of the wood from that aging process.
Okay.
But I've had a lot of breweries, you know, sample out a really good beer, and they're like, yeah, we're putting this in a barrel, and you're kind of like, I wouldn't do that.
Because the beer's good as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mean Girl Jesse is 100% correct. in that, no, I mean, really, like, the barrel is as much of an ingredient as the barley, the hops. Yeah. It's just a whole nother flavor element of the beer, and it doesn't necessarily make something better to put it in wood. It makes it different. You know, good, smart brewers, they build beers around the idea that it's going into a barrel, and as it ages, as it takes in, you know, oaky tannins or, you know, vanillin over time, it complements that base beer instead of just kind of shouting at it.
Yeah.
Well, one of the brewers I talked to that I know, I said, oh, this was their first time putting a beer at Fobab. And I said, well, how'd it turn out? He said, he didn't leave it in long enough. So how long, I know, well, how long do you guys put yours in the barrel, and how long do you think for a barrel-aged beer to be a success? If the base is everything being equal and it's going to be good, how long does it need to stay in?
Well, we have, as far as our barrel-aged Imperial Stout, that's about 11 months, give or take. If we're doing something special, it'll last longer. But if you look at our wild ales, they vary from, we've got some that we can take out after 12 months, and we've got some that sit around for like 18 months.
Okay.
Because those are more yeast-driven beers, and it's really up to that yeast to like tell you whether that beer's falling within your flavor profile, where stouts, you're not really going for the yeast, you're going for the flavor that the barrel's giving off or adding into the beer itself.
What about you guys at Revolution?
It's about the same. We have versions we call very special old, so like very special old straight jacket, very special old Death Star, and our recent release was a blend of 2 and 3 year barrels of barley wine aged. That beer was just ridiculous, but you know, it's harder to do that because not only are you waiting longer, you're also, you know, paying rent on the barrel
right.
the entire time, so... You know, you've really got to have your production and your barrel program nailed down to be able to plan something, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road to make a product that you just can't sell right away.
Now, you know, the law in Kentucky is a bourbon barrel can only be used once. Can you guys reuse the bourbon for beer? Can you reuse them, or do you reuse the barrels?
For Bourbon County Stout, it's a one use only.
Okay.
So once we get it, we either sell it back to our distributor, our barrel broker. We used to sell it to Scotland. They're the biggest purchaser of bourbon barrels.
I just learned that Scotland is buying, you know, and they're upset because now the law might change in Kentucky.
Yeah.
That's the buzz down there. But anyway, back, so you'd either sell them to a dealer or you'd sell them over there.
Yeah, I know some other breweries that have reused bourbon barrels, but we just don't. Our wine barrels are flavor neutral, so we're just using the vessels because it's the best living condition for the yeast and all the microbes that we have. So we can reuse those until the beer starts tasting, you know, out of flavor profile. So
yeah, another thing is those things come in with you know, some residual liquor still sloshing around in there. Another part of what we're talking about you plan for is the ABV they pick up just from residual spirits. Barrels are cool, but they're not immortal. So after that first use, you've pulled out all the spirit character and a lot of the oak character. So, you know, you can keep it or put something else in there, but unless it's a smaller beer, you're going to see a diminished result.
Oh, okay. Very interesting.
In Chicago, with both of us, we don't temperature control our bourbon barrels. So for, you know, the 11 months, that beer's going in and out, expanding, contracting of the wood, and that beer's, that's where it's getting, taking all the flavor out of that wood.
Oh, so once you use it,
well, yeah, after one full cycle,
Everything that you get out of there is gone anyway.
So yeah.
So a few barrels of our beer we put a year in a barrel and then some extra time in a second barrel. So you get extractions from two woods, but, you know, like doing it the opposite way. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do see some breweries who age a Imperial Stout and then they put something lighter in it, like a Saison, or, I mean, we have some examples of lagers. I don't know if anybody would necessarily, I haven't seen any craft brewers do that at this point, lager a beer in a barrel, a second use barrel or third use barrel. But it's a possibility for sure. But most, like what John was saying, most of the character of the spirits that are in it are out, but you can still pick up some coconut, vanilla, and even some smoky characters out of those barrels once that big, huge stout is out of it.
Yeah.
And then it also infuses a little bit of the beer that was in it before into that lighter ale or lager that you're putting into those barrels.
All right, the boys are here. It is another edition of At the Brewery. John Carruthers from Revolution, Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island, and John Scholl from Cicerone. We have three styles of beer that we will be comparing, and we will do that right after this on WGN. All right, it is Brian Noonan on WGN. This is At the Breweries, our monthly segment where our good friends John Carruthers and Jesse Valenciana come in from Revolution and Goose Island, respectively. And today, they brought one of their friends, John Scholl. He is a Cicerone. He's with Cicerone, the beer certification program that all the best beer people go through. And we are going to start with we have three styles, as we do every time the guys are on. So now that Cody is done with the photo shoot, who wants to introduce the first style of beer that we are doing today?
You want to start off, John?
Yeah, I'll go with this one. So this one is not a craft beer, and it's going to kind of go to show how big barrel aging has gotten.
Okay.
So what I have poured is a Budweiser.
Just a regular old Budweiser.
What is that, John?
It's an American lager. And then a Budweiser copper lager. So it's a copper lager, which is a little bit more malty than your regular Budweiser, but it still looks pretty much the same label-wise, so something that you would find in the store.
It's a cool bottle, though.
It's a great-looking bottle, and it's been aged on Jim Beam staves.
Jim Beam.
What does that mean, aged Jim Beam. On staves?
It's a coffee.
So I think what happens, Budweiser's traditionally lagered on beechwood.
Oh, sure, beechwood-aged Budweiser.
Exactly.
I've been inundated with the commercial since I was old enough to pay attention.
And what that does is it cleans up the beer a little bit, allows the yeast to have more surface area to eat up flavors and off flavors that you don't necessarily want in a lager. What I think happened with this is they've added Jim Beam. Jim Beam.
Sorry, I'm going to give you a complex.
Well, Sean is loaded for bear today. He's coming after everybody.
I deserve that one, though. So I think they put the staves into the lagering tanks and lagered as they would their normal lager on this wood opposed to beechwood. So yeah, let's just take a look at it. So there's a noticeable difference between the two. I mean, Brian, what are you seeing between these two beers?
Well, the Budweiser, everybody knows what a Budweiser looks like. It looks like any lager, very light in color. The effervescence is there. It looks like any mass-produced lager that you would see. And then you come into the Copper Age one. It looks like an amber ale, kind of. It's got that nice coppery color, that amber color. Still light enough where you could see through it, so it's not going to scare people who are afraid of dark beers.
Yeah,
but the look is the same.
And I think this beer is a good approachable one for those who are interested to get into barrel aged beers because it's not that big, 10% stout.
Right.
So you just took a sip of it. What are you tasting here?
I still taste the Budweiser. I still taste the base Budweiser. Getting a little of the wood flavor, but not like most of the barrel aged beers that you have, where you're really tasting what was in that barrel, you know. This is the overwhelming flavor is still Budweiser.
On the nose, I like this. Like, obviously, you can't smell sweetness, but it smells like almost caramely.
Yeah, I get that too.
Right?
Yeah, I get
that. That's what kind of jumps out at me, but
it's a little too sweet in, you know, on the palate for me. But it's definitely a lot different than just Budweiser.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Budweiser is one of those beers that has like a big carbonic bite, so it dries out. It's that refreshing on a hot summer day. This one, you get the notes of caramel and brown sugar and a little vanilla, and it finishes sweeter. Like it almost has a residual sugar in it, so it's not that mouth drying refreshing feel that you get. It doesn't dry your mouth as much.
No, there's some residue on the tongue. I think if people are big fans of barrel-aged, this is not going to... You're right, John. This is an entry-level barrel-aged because you... Again, going back to, in my mind, when I'm going to have a barrel-aged, it's you're really getting all those notes from whatever spirit was in that barrel, and that's what's missing here.
I feel like you could have got the flavors that are in the Jim Beam Budweiser.
James Beam, say it correctly.
That's my favorite bourbon, James Beam.
James Beam.
He was also a great star. Died too young, but that's a whole other thing.
But I feel like you could have got this. You could have gotten the same flavor profile if you just changed the malt bill.
Yeah, I was tasting this out, I was like, well, it's kind of like a Vienna lager. It's very similar to that. So again, if somebody likes this type of beer, if somebody's going from a Budweiser and say, all right, I want to see what this barrel-aged stuff is all about and try this, if they like it, a Vienna lager might be a good transition to them to get
it
into
something. It almost reminds me of an Oktoberfest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's sweetness.
The sweetness, yeah. I don't know.
That Walter Payton-ness.
I don't know if this is going to have a career year, but we'll see. John, what did you think of this one?
Something about it's too sweet.
The same thing where, like, if I find an Oktoberfest I don't like, it's that same, that too caramelly, just kind of cloying taste to it. It's not for me. I am glad they're doing something cool. I mean, I wouldn't be mad if I found that and, you know, it's a 6.2% Budweiser. They're clearly trying something new. It's just, like, it doesn't do it for me.
Is it one of those things where, I mean, with all the craft breweries doing it, the big brewers, they have to adapt. They're not going to see this trend. I mean, when you see people lining up outside stores and lining up for festivals and they, you know, Budweiser isn't going to go, well, that's just a fad. We're not going to, of course they have to pay attention and jump on the bandwagon.
Well, and it costs them almost nothing to do it, too.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. They've got all the infrastructure is there.
Plus, they've got a very close relationship with Jim Beam, so... you know, I think you get to a point, too, where it's like, what do we do? Like, how do we make this relationship work? What do we want to do with this relationship? So,
well, the first thing is they need to know how to pronounce the name of the beer. Of the
Jormsborn.
Somebody texted in a question. This we'll do this before we go to break, and then we'll have two more styles of beer to talk about. Isn't a lager fermented at 32 degrees or colder? Is that what makes it a lager? Everybody, summer shy, seeing heads going both ways.
The main thing is the yeast strain. So there's two different kinds of, well, there's two main kinds of beer yeast. There's ale yeast and there's lager yeast. And they do ferment at different temperatures, but it's not the temperature that makes it so much as the yeast strain, right?
All right, perfect.
But it does lager at that temperature.
Ah, all right. John Carruthers is here, Jesse Valenciana is here, and John Scholl is here. We are having another edition of At the Breweries. On the other side of the news, we'll sample a couple more styles and find out what the guys think about them. If you have questions, always welcome, 312-981-7200. More with the boys after this, WGN. We've got John Carruthers from Revolution Brewing, Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island, and John Scholl. He is with the Cicerone Certification Program. You can follow John Carruthers, UT Chicago, at UT Chicago, Jesse Manbecue, and John is Scholl Beer. Is that correct?
Scholl Beers.
Scholl Beers. Oh, plural, because you can't stop at one. It's like Lay's potato chips. Nobody can.
Because Jim Bean was taken.
Ding. Boom. Wow.
Got him.
Carruthers is ready tonight.
Hey,
he's been
quick.
With the family all Thanksgiving. Now he's all revved up.
If we're taking shots, can I take a shot at Cody?
Sure, please.
Months ago, I said that I wanted Beer for Breakfast, a song by The Replacements, played.
Yeah, you did.
Did I not?
As one of the bumpies. Yeah.
Yeah,
Cody, Beer for Breakfast.
I don't remember that.
Let's go. Real quick, before
we get at the end of the show?
Before we get into the second, you got to ask him before the segment starts. Real quick question for John from Revolution, real quick. Will there be a Revolution VSOD release this year, and if so, when?
We are not canning it, but it's currently 2018 VSODs on tap at the Brew Pub and the Tap Room, and I believe you can get crawlers of it to go, so get there while we're still pouring it.
So that's very special old Darkstar?
Death Star.
All right. Jim Beam and Death Star. This is like a tongue twister at the breweries. Very exciting. All right, what's our next style, gentlemen?
So this is an American wit beer. It's that Belgian style where you get that nice cloudy beer with the very yeast-forward character. It's like a Allagash, a Hoegaarden, a Blue Moon, if you will.
All right.
The example we brought here is from Avery Brewing out in Colorado. They make a very nice wit beer. This is called White Rascal.
Okay.
It's so creamy.
It really is. Soft on the mouth, and it's sounds weird. Soft on the palate, it has kind of peachy pear kind of.
Soft.
Now I wish there was a word that meant mouthfeel that didn't wasn't it because it's not my favorite word. Anyway,
it is creamy and soft.
It's a nice beer. Like this is a good. I don't like craft beer. Person, like, make them try one of these. This is a very agreeable, really drinkable beer.
Well, people
style.
Like is it people like. I think they started drinking wit beers. Blue Moon was like the first big popular one. And it's, people put an orange in it. Oh, look, there's an orange in it. It's like people were, you know, putting fruit in Coronas. It's like, ooh, that makes it accessible because now there's fruit in it. Wit beer is basically just a wheat beer, right? Is that?
Yeah, it's a Belgian style wheat beer. It's got fruity notes to it. Some are made with coriander and zest, other spices. Allagash has a secret spice that they make sure to tell you. They're never going to tell you on the tour.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. So vice is wheat, vit is white, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is nice. I'm not a big wit guy, you know.
Well, what about after we jam it up in some wine barrels? Because that's what we got for you.
Oh yeah, now this
stay with me.
This one's
I had to.
Get out.
Oh, I had to.
Wow. You guys have had too much turkey or something over the last couple of days. You are revved up. It's great. This looks like a cider to me as I hold it up. It looks like I'm going to be drinking some apple cider or something.
Yeah, so this is one of the beers where it's stylistically okay to have it not be super clear. The Rob Todd, who started Allagash, said that when he first started selling Allagash at bars, people would send it back because they thought it had like clean chemicals or something in it.
The glass is dirty. It's all cloudy.
Yeah. And then our local barrel-aged version here is Illuminated Brew Works Handmade Grace. So they took an American wit beer and they aged it in wine barrels with a couple of inoculating strains of bacteria that create, you know, they throw off a lot of different kind of barrel-y, delicious, farmhouse-y flavors. I actually have been running my mouth and haven't got to sip it yet, so let's see what we got here.
It's really nice and tart. I like that.
That's why I don't like it. And to be honest, I don't like sours or tarts, and it's, yeah, it's, for me, I took that sip, and it's like, I'm on a pass. I'm not, I don't like the tartness.
I think, I understand that the base beer was a wit, but I think calling it a wit doesn't do it any favors.
Yeah, because it's, I don't think it's anything close to a wit.
Yeah.
It's more like a sour than anything else.
Yeah, a lot of the delicate notes of what you get in a wit beer, you know, the little peach, pear, kind of, maybe a little bit of coriander is kind of overshadowed by the barrel here. But this was a good opportunity, we thought, to talk about how, you know, a barrel isn't just jam and chocolate and coconut and vanilla and, I don't know, donut flavors into a beer. You can also create a lot of, like, wild fermentation characteristics that, I know you don't like it, but at least it's an interesting sort of dislike.
Listen, you don't have to bring there's going to be, there's four people in here, and Cody, there's five of us, everybody's not going to like everything.
Yeah. But yeah,
and so I'm on record that I'm not a sour and tart guy. I try them, but I'm not the guy.
Yeah.
Not
so
my thing.
This picks up just some real funky kind of, I don't know, everyone says it, that I didn't get this until I drank a lot of beer for a living, but like barnyardy kind of aromas.
Yeah.
It's really just kind of a walk in the woods here, and then it's got, I don't think it's an overly sour finish, but it is pretty tart.
I think it's very apricot-y.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. The finish, the tartness goes away quick. It doesn't linger in your mouth or anything. It's just, but that initial hit is, for me, off-putting.
Yeah.
I think the more you drink it, take a couple more sips, you're going to acclimate to that tartness.
Or will I become drunk and it won't matter? Either way.
7% for a barrel beer, it's darn near sessionable.
Yeah, people say that all the time. Well, you just haven't drank enough of them. Well, that's maybe in some cases that's true. In some cases, you know what you like or you don't like, or you're on the fence enough where you can be swayed one way or another. Sometimes it's just like, nope.
Right. I have a rule, like, always take at least four sips of a beer, even if I don't like it, because...
There's three.
Three, all right.
I have the same rule with my kids and vegetables.
I am your kid, John. So when you have a beer, you have some residual sugar sweetness from the beer that you had before, so now you're going to something that's tart, and it's going to be even feel more tart to you because you have sugar, essentially, in your mouth. So cleanse the palate a couple times, and then... Then you're going to pick up that apricot. No, that's exactly what happened to me. And I think if you take a couple more sips,
right, this
maybe.
Is sip number four.
All right, let's see if it
takes sip number four.
And then he's going to slap you in the face.
Probably.
Yeah, then I'm coming over and tossing you out.
You ready for the spit take? Here we go.
Well, here's something, Brian, while you're drinking. This, our friends at Illuminated say this is the perfect accessory for almost any meal or the perfect ending to a three-day bender. So maybe we just haven't done enough self-destruction.
That's right, I haven't been drinking enough. Let's schedule a bender.
Next month at the breweries.
Right. We'll start on Thursday. We'll drink nonstop, and then we'll show up on Sunday. Sorry, John. Still a no-go.
No, still no-go.
And that's not a slam. Everybody has personal preference. It's just, it was, I will say, incrementally less tart, but not enough where I would go, oh, yeah, it's completely, still not, for me, it's not my cup of tea.
I think it's a good tasting beer, but it's doing itself a this.
What would you call it then?
I think it's a wild ale. I think it'd be easier just to call it a wild ale.
Okay.
You know, it's cool that the base beer was wit, but for them, I feel that to sell more, put in that category. I think it's a good beer.
Yeah.
I'm not a big wild ale guy, but they did a good job out the flavor in it.
I think it's really nice. And when you go back to the Avery after having that, it's like doing that thing where you jump from the hot tub back into the pool at the hotel.
Yeah.
You
know?
All right. And what's going to be our final style that we will hear after the break?
What Imperial Stout.
Imperial Stout. Yeah. Now you are talking my language.
All I want to eat is them Baba.
Once you call Cody out, he's not gonna lay down and take it. He's coming back hard with beer for breakfast. Nice job, Cody.
I just want to get in there and get some beer.
You've earned yourself a beer. Come on in.
He's earned a Budweiser Jim Beam.
Ooh, the Jim Beam Budweisers. Those are fantastic. John Scholl almost spit out his nose.
Yes.
That is not good. John Scholl is here. He's with the Cicerone Certification Program. Jesse Valenciana is from Goose Island, and John Carruthers is from Revolution Brewing. You can follow John, UT Chicago, at UT Chicago. Jesse is at Jesse Manbecue, and John Scholl is at Scholl Beers, S-C-H-O-L-L Beers. The traditional spelling for beers, am I correct?
Yeah, that's it. Back to our German roots.
No Z.
Now, listen, we have a good question from Brian in Montana. We'll save that for the end because it gets, it sounds like it could go on for hours and hours, the explanation. But, and I want to get to our third style of beer that I have been eyeing patiently while I drank, while I drank that sour stuff. Four sips still. No go. And then we cleansed our palate with a nice Mexican lager from Cruz Blanca.
Mexico Calling. Those guys, they just started canning, so Mexico Calling is going to be available outside of their brew pub.
Very nice.
Randolph, yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, and John, you mentioned that this is a style that's on the rise, because I talked about going to Buckle Down, and they have Cactus Pants, which is a Mexican lager, which is really good as well. And this is something that's, is this like the next kind of wave, do you think?
I don't know if it's the next wave, but it's something that at a time when the industry is kind of shaken out and seeing, you know, how much saturation there is, Mexican-style lagers and Mexican imports are still, like, really trending upward.
For a real quick explanation, Mexican lager.
Just a nice, crisp, light, easy-drinking lager.
Perfect. All right.
It's almost like it's styled off of Vienna lager, so
okay.
A little bit more malt. Forward.
Real approachable for people who are, you know, looking for something lighter.
Yeah, if you've had a Victoria or a Pacifico or a Corona, you've gotten in the ballpark.
Yeah, the style actually came from the different European immigrants that are coming through Mexico and started brewing down there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
sounds
it's
good.
Neat.
All right. Imperial Stouts.
Imperial Stouts.
So let's go. For, I wanted to use Expedition Stout. It's from Bell's. It's a very traditional, even in the BJCP guide that is, you know, it tells you what a stout should be.
Beer Judge Certification Program.
Thank you.
So Expedition Stout is one of the
terminology, wouldn't it?
The beers that they cite as an example. So Imperial Stout, very robust, very big, very malty, should have little, if any, hop character. You normally don't have any.
Yeah.
So the first one is Bell's.
This is a classic, just absolute legend beer.
Yeah, it's terrific.
So roasty. That's what
I
like about it.
Imagine getting this in the '90s when, like,
oh man,
you know, yeah.
People would freak out.
Yeah, they'd just throw a chair through the window and fly onto the.
I will go. John's theory of four sips with a stout. If you've never had it, you definitely need to go, because I remember the first time I had a Guinness and I thought, oh man, I can't drink this at all. And now you could pump this into me through an IV and I'd be happy. Because there is, some of them have a little bitterness. You're getting, you said roasty, and you get some coffee, and you get some, depending on the style, you get some chocolatey flavors under there, and a lot of malt and stuff, and there's a lot going on. And it's really dark, so people are like,
It's intimidating. I mean, even Guinness was, like, to your point, when I was younger, I remember drinking Guinness, and it was like, wow, that's a big beer.
Yeah.
It's really a light beer. It's
very light.
4%, you know?
Yeah, like 4.2.
Especially compared to, what's the difference between stout and imperial stout?
Imperial, it's higher ABV.
Okay.
You know, it's a bigger beer than.
It's more of everything, more malt, more hops,
yeah.
More joy.
So do all three of you agree that this is an imperial stout? This is a good baseline. If you want to try a top line imperial stout, this is the Bell's is the way to
yeah, this is
enter.
Almost the Imperial Stout. There's also
this
North Coast
Rasputin,
makes Old Rasputin.
Yeah.
It's also very good, but my personal preference lies with this one. This one's a great beer.
Yeah.
And what ABV is this? How much alcohol?
That's a good question.
Is this another thing? You can't, if you're going out and you're thinking, I'm going to spend a whole night getting hammered, one of these you may be done.
Yeah, it'll knock you on your butt. This one's 10%.
Yeah. That's the beauty of these, and this one isn't, this is just an imperial stout. This is not a barrel aged.
Not barrel aged.
This is just the straight up go for it.
Yeah, so it's, you know, if someone wants to really dive into bourbon barrel aged imperial stouts, it's like, try this. If you can handle this, then maybe you can graduate to that other level, because once you go beyond this, it's that black hole of
It's beers. It's not for the weak.
Yeah,
it's not. Or the uninitiated.
Yeah, a couple more of these, and we'll be like, oh, man, I hope I remember to record at the breweries yesterday. All I know is that it hurts, and I want some White Castle.
Well, I told you guys off the air, I was trying to be very, very responsible at FOBAB, only taking a sip of some and, you know, pouring some out, but finishing this, and they were small samples. We weren't getting, you know, they were supposed to, it was 3 ounce, but most of them, they were smartly pouring less, and I took my Uber home. And I was asleep within 5 minutes. It was like, I was out. Because this stuff will sneak up on you.
Oh, it does. All these big ones, that's what they do. But it's like a happy drunk.
Yes, so the Bell's Imperial Stout, we all agree, if you love stouts, this is the one.
It's worth a try.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, especially this time of year. It's like one of those scratchy Irish sweaters, just big warm hug for you.
This is a cigar. We only have a couple minutes.
Uh-oh.
So okay. Now we go to...
The Barrel Boy.
So Ray Gordo is from... Cruz Blanca, and they actually just released their barrel-aged beers for the year yesterday.
Yes.
Jacob Sombrano is doing an amazing job. I think he's probably one of my favorite brewers in Chicago. He's doing the most creative beer, and he's just a great, crafty brewer. You know, he knows what flavors to get out of his beers. And this beer, he could have done an Imperial Stout in bourbon barrels, but he actually put them in Barbados rum barrels.
Ooh.
So immediately off the bat, you taste like it, you smell like... some kind of fruity notes on the...
Yeah, I almost get maple-y notes out of rum barrel beers. I mean that in a nice way. Like, rum barrel beers are a little harder to find because you can use those barrels until they just go belly up.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you could... And there's definitely the difference between the heavy smokiness of a bourbon and the flavor and texture of a rum. You can definitely tell the difference in this.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
I get, like, if you uncapped the vanilla in your cooking cabinet... Like, I get a big whiff of that on the aroma, which it's nice. It's good.
It's really viscous, too. I love that, too. It's very creamy.
I get, like, a sweet raisin kind of character.
Yeah, yes. Very raisiny.
Viscous, motor oil, whatever you want to call it.
I like it. I like the adjectives. We're using a lot of adjectives. Unfortunately, we are running out of time.
No more adjectives.
I know. No more adjectives. Except, we'll be a little late. Real quick. Brian in Montana said, what barrel style of beer is aged with the lid removed from the barrel? Is that a thing?
I think that's just open fermentation. There's not, it's so like a wild ale, you know?
They do open fermentation?
They do. That's what, you get those tart things that, you know, inform all your favorite beers that you told us about. Yeah. The tart, the sour, the wild.
Oh, fantastic. That's my wheelhouse. That's my jam, as the kids say. What kid says that?
You can make, I mean, as long as you brew the beer to be wild fermented, you can brew almost any kind of beer and get neat characteristics in it like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Brian. All right, real quick, we did, let's recap the three styles we did.
We did barrel-aged and Jim Beam. With Jim Beam barrels, Budweiser.
No, they aged them actually inside Jim Beam.
Yes, that was crazy. The statue.
He's a big man. He's a very big man.
So we did the...
Yes, we got the James Beam Budweiser.
Yes.
Not a fan. Mm. We had the American-style Whitbeer with Avery was the base, and then we got one from Illuminated, Handmade Grace. We enjoyed it. You,
I like the
so
base
much.
Beer, not so much the other one. And then?
We finished off with Expedition Stout from Bell's.
So good.
We enjoyed that. And then the Rey Gordo from Cruz Blanca, and we all love that.
Fantastico.
Seriously?
Yeah. And the artwork on that bottle, I have to say, it's really cool.
Oh, yeah,
it's a luchador mask.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, well, that is it for this edition of At the Breweries. The boys will be back again soon. John Carruthers from Revolution, you can follow him at UT Chicago. Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island Brewing, follow him at Jesse Manbecue. And John Scholl, you can follow him at Scholl Beers. That's plural. Don't just put one beer because he needs more than one. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. We will talk to you again very soon.
Cheers.
Thank you.
All right, cheers. thank you for listening and being part of the program. The at the brewery's kit. We're going to have to start doing like an after thing, Cody, where we just no, where we keep going. We could just keep going on Facebook or something. We'll do that for next time. All right, Karen Conti is coming your way next. We will talk to you very soon. There will be a new podcast that drops next Sunday. Thank you for inviting us into your car, your home, your life. We are grateful to be Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 7 o'clock with the news. Here's Roger Badish.
Thank you very much.